Hello,
and thank you for joining us. You're listening to the 8-4 Play Podcast, the only podcast you need when it comes to Japan games and Japanese games. Once again, your regular host, Mark Gaming Jesus McDonald, is unavailable. I believe he's on a plane to Tokyo right now. He's been in the West Coast pitching his anime crossover of House of Dragons and Mystical Ninja Presents Super Goemon 2. He told us it went well, so maybe Netflix will give him 6 episodes. Fingers crossed. We're really rooting for you, Mark.
Follow your dreams, man.
Follow your dreams. In the interim, I, Gabriel Battery-Powered De Leon, a.k.a. New and Improved, a.k.a. 5 a.m. Boy, will take you, the listener, by the hand, after you wash it, on an oral, A-U-R-A-L, journey to the Tokyo skyline. But I only have 2 hands. I don't know who these people are.
You have to qualify that.
But I only have 2 hands. So I'm extremely lucky to say that it's not just my hand you'll be holding. No, I am accompanied by not 2, not 3, but 4 of my good friends of Japan. Starting with John, mute button is overrated, Riccardi.
How are you, sir? Hi. I have so many things to say. First of all, did you spend your whole flight writing that or like what? Like, was that?
It did
that
feel prepared.
Not, yeah.
Maybe.
That's my first question. My second question, it actually really is like 5 a.m. or something. Isn't it early in the morning? Are you like in your house with your family or something? Are you like waking people up, screaming your shy in the basement or wherever you are or what?
Well, the point of being in the basement is to not wake people up. So we'll know after this recording if I disturbed any of the folks living in here. Yes, I'm actually in New York
in the
right
Consumer
now.
Consumer Reports basement.
Yes, live from the Consumer Reports basement in upstate New York, the Consumer Reports compound.
Nice. You're up in the Catskills. Yeah,
up a little south of that, but we don't need to get any more specific. John,
drop a pin for our listeners.
Drop a pin.
What about my mute button? Sorry, why am I muted? What happened?
Technical difficulties and our other guest Roy, executive producer Blakely, pointed out you were talking to Siri and opted to not mute. Instead, you threw your headphones like you were bench pressing about 12 feet above your head, and then you kept talking. We still heard you.
I didn't need to hide from you. I just didn't want to be screaming in your ear. I figured, like, if it's background noise, it's better than like yelling in your face.
Okay, but you understand that you don't need to yell at Siri, right? Like, Siri can hear you.
We have a volatile relationship with me and my Siri, so sometimes, you know, need to lay
which, some out. Which, sorry, I'm going to completely derail. Which voice setting do you use for your Siri?
I think it's just the standard, like, of course it's the female voice, but I think it's the standard, like, American one. Like, if you buy the English,
why of course?
I know, that's
because
thank
if you,
you
set your region to, you know, actually, my region is Japan, so I don't know why it would be that. But anyway, that was the default one, and I just never changed it. And
oh, okay, okay.
American female Siri, basically.
I see.
Don't you? My Siri
is the Australian male voice, because he sounds very gentle when he speaks. So, you know, hey, Siri, please set. Oh, no, wait. Mute don't that part, it. Because I don't want to activate other people's when they're
no,
talking.
No, that's great. Let's activate everybody's Siri.
No, I don't want to do
Siri
that.
Was I playing? I was actually playing. Was it Xenoblade? It was Xenoblade Chronicles, and one of the characters' names, Senna, actually triggered my HomePod Mini. The HomePod thought it was talking to it, so that was annoying.
Oh my god, that's a great idea. So, like, wait, what is Google's thing? Is what Alexa?
Okay,
like, oh no, all your lines crossed now.
No, what is, I forget. What is, whatever.
Google Assistant.
There's a name for it, right? Like, you can say,
that's
like,
Amazon's.
Hey, Amazon
has Alexa? Has
Alexa. Whoever it is. It would be great to put a party member in an RPG named Alexa and then, like, call out to them in battle so that when people are playing that game, like, it's constantly triggering people's
Alexa.
Personal assistant.
That's super rude, and I don't
put that
I
on
hate
the list.
It.
We got to do that.
All right.
I would, anyway. I would thumbs down your game immediately if it did that.
Next I apologize for missing the last episode, and I may be missing part of this one because we're insanely busy right now working on some pretty cool stuff, but it's extremely time consuming, and so if I drop out at some point, sorry in advance. I won't be gone for like 4 weeks like Mark, but I might be gone for like a half hour.
This is like my 4th show hosting in a row or 5.
He'll be back. He'll be back next time, and he's gonna have to do several shows all by himself to make up for the lost time.
Oh, ooh, soliloquies.
Yeah.
Real growth exactly. as an artist in his future.
Is this Patreon content or we're just taking a vacation around him?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Okay. All right. Moving on. We teased him earlier. Roy, executive producer Blakely. Roy, I opted to give you the executive producer credit today.
All right.
Because you were critical to securing our very special guest, who I will get to in a couple more minutes. But I just wanted to shout out to Roy. Everyone, thank Roy. You know what? Just...
Yeah, it was, I mean, it, you know, the special guest and I, we had to really work hard to make this happen. It was a lot of my people calling his people. There were a lot of emails back and forth, a lot of phone calls, a lot of secretaries being on hold, but here we all are.
Somehow you had a direct line.
Who's that? We'll get... and then before we get to our special guest, Tina Pale Blood Carter, this is going to be a Soulsborne episode today, Tina.
Hey.
We don't have enough of those.
Nah, it's in my contract, at least once every other episode. But Tina, we'll get into Bloodborne in a bit, but just real quick, two words. What do you think?
Bitchin' and that's awesome.
Two words. Thank you very much. Bitchin'. Thank you. and then finally, I am happy to bring back friend of the show. It's been about a year. In fact, he was teasing.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, we were.
And it's been a very uneventful year. Nothing has happened.
Not at all.
Like, absolutely nothing.
Nah, I turned on Zero. CNN and it's like, man, government's boring here in the States. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back from Chew High Labs, Liam Edwards.
Hey. Liam. Kind of disappointed I didn't get a nickname.
Do you want one? I come up with
one.
Yeah,
come on.
Late now.
Come on, Gabe.
Boy, blew it. All that preparation.
Hold that breath.
Roy is never going to get to call this man again.
You've got your little soundboard there next to you.
All right, here you go. We got... Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Liam Edwards. Thank you.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I'll take that. All right. I get the best one. That's great. Good start. Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. You
have not been busy or anything.
Yeah, no. You just
very
had to
boring
hang out.
Yeah. I was like last year I came on to announce that I'd just announced a game, and then since then I've done nothing. But finish, you know, that's it.
That's impressive, man, to get a game out in that amount of time. I mean, obviously you didn't start it. I think you didn't start it the day you were on the podcast, hopefully, but
no.
Still, you know, it's funny thinking
a crazy
about it,
idea that like, would be.
Well, I wouldn't put it past you. You've done some crazy stuff in your career, but, you know, getting the game out on time and we'll talk about whether or not it turned out any good. And a little bit here, but
shoot.
But actually thinking back, like joking aside, like it was a year ago, but like I'm of two minds because on one hand, I feel like it was very recently. On the other hand, like if I think back to like a year ago, like on the calendar, it feels like 12 years ago. Like it feels like it's been so long since last summer. Time doesn't make sense
Everything
anymore.
Everything feels 3 weeks ago and
we're about to hit TGS again. Like what? What? Like
I know.
I don't get it anymore.
Like we're already like 3 weeks, 4 weeks past Bid Summit, and that felt.
I know that was just like yesterday or something. I don't know.
It is crazy because last year was when the start of Bid Summit happened again, and we had sort of that very hospital like version of it. And then we since then we've had our new Bid Summit, the return of it, and what a blast that was. Time moves.
It was
quickly.
Fun this year. I mean, it was nice to get, you know, for us anyway in Japan, we don't have the E3s and the, you know, DICEs and GDC and anime this and whatever that. And so it's been a spell. It's been a while since we were all able to kind of be in the same place as a lot of industry people. I don't remember if we talked about it much after actual Bid Summit on this show, or maybe I wasn't around for it, but like, you know, just seeing people and socializing again and kind of remembering what it was like to be around other people in the game business was like simultaneously really rewarding and exciting and also like incredibly exhausting. It's like you're like socializing muscles are like limp.
Yeah.
You know, like they kind of, that actually is a skill that goes weak if you don't practice it all the time. So
I was doing earlier today, exciting story. I was doing my expenses from that trip and I was looking at my receipts like, what did I even do? I have a receipt from it. I don't remember going to that place. The entire thing is just a complete blur to me because I was so tired the entire time. Mm. You could tell me you actually, jumped into the river and swam laps for 6 miles. I'd believe you. I don't remember any of it.
I remember,
and I wasn't even drunk the whole time because I realized that joke's an easy joke to make.
sitting in a family restaurant that was themed like a Western. What's that place called again?
Bikkuri Donkey.
Bikkuri Donkey.
Bikkuri Donkey. All the young people are actually out having fun. Sorry, not to imply you're not young. I dragged you down. It was my fault.
Well, you're also implying I'm not fun, so whatever. It's fine.
Shotgun there.
You cut that. Anyway.
I didn't come to family therapy. Come on.
No, you came here to hype up your big release, Liam, Curse to Golf.
Well, I was alluded because we were going to talk about Bloodborne and Sekiro, which is far more exciting to me. But I appreciate you allowing me to talk more about this golf game.
I think everyone but Tina has put time into it. I've put in about 5 hours. Roy, whoa, how much time have you sunk in?
So my Steam,
hear what I did there?
I saw that. I got that. I caught that.
My Steam was saying 4 hours, but I think it may have been some alt tab time. I'm like, okay. I don't know what's wrong with me, Liam. I can't get past the ball spin tutorial part. I've been trying over. I just miss it every time.
I have
was
a it, question.
I don't. Was that hard? I don't remember that even being a thing. I just did it and kept moving. Is it something you have to accomplish before you can get out of the tutorial?
Kinda.
I'm not making fun. I'm serious. I don't remember. I must have just. I mean, I am an experienced golf video.
I definitely.
But yeah, no. It wasn't a thing that I got stuck on. I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit I'm not the best at video games. Believe me. I think it's just. I don't know if I misunderstood something about the instructions for it or just bad luck, but yeah, it definitely is I haven't been able to get past it, and there's no exit out of it, kind of. So
this this right here, this conversation is the dichotomy of the past 2 weeks for me. It's the,
I'm sorry,
of what my every single waking moment has been.
I'm sorry, Bloodborne's a good game.
No, I want to hear more about that, though. You mean in terms of this specific topic or just the general topic of different things in your game, or spin tutorial bringing down?
No, definitely not. The spin tutorial is not something actually surprisingly, because in the demo it did come up originally.
Okay.
And we made changes to it to try and get people through. The one thing we didn't add was kind of a failsafe to push people through regardless, because we saw once we changed it, actually statistically, people would just get through. Except Roy. The third one is special. A case where you have to do two different things, which is you have to land it in a certain area and then bop it over, spin it back, because the one thing that we wanted to make clear was that the spin doesn't just work in one direction. It's really important to know that you can spin it one way, but also in the same action, spin it back. So you could do different things to do platforming.
Right, it's very video gamey and not at all realistic, and I like that actually, because it's I found myself just spinning probably when I didn't need to. You kind of just want to spin every time once you learn to spin,
spin every shot. That's what I do, regardless of if you need to get more distance, don't get any distance, land where you want.
Start planning shots to be slightly off from where you want it to land, just so you can spin to where you want it to land.
Yeah, actually. My favorite thing is to spin off the top of pillars and then land in the hole stylishly. And
nice.
Like that.
I think that's the sign of a good mechanic, though, where that you want to mess around with it, even if it's not necessarily critical to do what you're trying to, do.
Okay.
Cool. So
I got some serious Pokemon 1998 vibes. Do I have to keep mashing the A button to continue the spin, or I just hit it once? Because it's one of those things of
it's one of you remember the old sort of gauges where you'd have to build it up and then it would slowly go down and you'd keep building it up. It works like that. So you repeatedly press it to build up the spin and then it will reach a maximum and then it will decrease immediately unless you keep pressing it. So, with that, it means that you can apply more or less, but there is there's an indicator on the ball, which direction it's going to spin, and to know that it's triggered, but also on the par count, which is the health in the middle, the shots, you'll see these arrows that spin around it, and the rotation speed they spin at is how much velocity sort of that you're spinning. So it does work with real physics. But yeah, so if you press it once, you'll get a little bit of spin, but yeah, it won't be the insane kick. If you go from a maximum. Yeah, so if you go from a maximum, it will decrease over 5 bounces, but you know, it'll still sort of take a chunk, so you can add a little bit. But no, in general, to go back to John's question, which is like, it's just been an interesting week, considering we're going to talk about Souls games and, you know, how in the public they're loved and stuff like that. Making challenging games in 2022 is a really tough thing, it turns out. And even if you think, you know, you've worked really hard to balance these things, because you get this, and I think it's almost a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, thankfully, let's say 80% of, you know, your audience love it and they don't want you to change anything. And because the way it is, that's why they love it. Like, they love the challenge. They love that the mechanics are, I think most of the trend that we saw with the reviews was that, which were for the majority positive, was that they went in expecting this golf game, and then they found out this really in-depth, like, mechanical sort of experience that can throw you off guard, because it is charming and it's cute and these things. And then you get into it and you're like, oh, whoa, wait, what the fuck is all this stuff that's happening? And you get taught spin and cards and all these things. But then once you get through that and you start experimenting with those things, then people really find the depth, and that's what they really enjoy. So changing that then to balance it for people who maybe not necessarily are able to do it or get along with it is then difficult, because you're detracting from the experience those people are having. Now, on the flip side of that, it turns out quite a, we'd say in the UK, it's like Marmite. It's like you either love it or you sort of hate it. And we didn't expect such an interesting divide over something that is, I think, thankfully, I'm not going to sort of ever take this back. Crystal Golf it went everywhere, right? Like, it was kind of like one of the most talked about games, like, in the past 2 weeks, which is crazy to us. We never expected. But the problem with that is that everyone that expects it to be something that maybe it's not, they expect it to be bigger than it is or something.
Sure.
And then they buy into it and they get it and they're severely disappointed, therefore maybe making it more of a negative experience for them. But then the people who really didn't gel with it really didn't gel with it.
Oh, really?
And for them, you know, it
do,
was...
Do you find in your experience, I mean, you've made other games before, obviously, do you find that this like, it was more so in this game? I mean, I'm guessing this is probably the most talked about game you've made so far since you've gone indie. So it's hard to compare, but like, relatively speaking, in terms of like positive versus negative feedback, would you say that there's more, it's more hardcore with this game than in previous games? Like, the people who are anti are like super.
I think it's like, I don't know really what to compare it to, but I feel like it's the best thing you could ever hope for, which is to have this really hardcore bunch of people who really do enjoy it, and then have the majority really, really like it. Because it is what it is. It's unapologetically so that. But on the flip side is, then you have to deal with the fact that the people who don't like it are not in the middle. It's very much more leaning towards whether, like, this is not a roguelike, how dare you trash roguelikes, or this is not a golf game, how dare you, like, not make it a golf game. Like, it's like expectations, I think, is the problem, maybe. But that's tough, because how are you supposed to really deal with those things? And yeah, it's crazy, because on the one hand, like, we got a 9 out of 10 from GameSpot, which is insane. I never thought that would happen, because this person really did gel with it. But then you'd watch some other streamer who'd play and get to a point where they wouldn't like it. And then they'd list off, I don't know how many times people sort of list off like what they would change about something. And the strange thing is, a lot of people's things that they want to change fundamentally make it not the game it is, right?
No, sure. Yeah, absolutely. There's no accounting for taste, too. Not to say that everybody who doesn't like it is wrong. Of course, that's not the case. But I mean, there are certainly, I read a couple when the reviews came out. I was like, I mean, I'm sure you've read every review inside and out. I know how that is.
Fortunately, so.
But like, I was like, I was looking at the positive ones, but then I was also looking for the negative ones to see what they were. And I only read a couple, but the couple I read just felt like, oh, you just kind of suck, and so you complained about the game. That was I could say that because it's not my game. That's what they sounded like to me. And it was like, oh, okay, well, you didn't get it, and you don't know how to play video games, and therefore you cried about it for 200 words. But that's what I read like two reviews like that, and I was like, okay. maybe you shouldn't be on the Metacritic scale in the first place, but like, but that's just like, you know,
there's a quote that I think it's someone who's talking about movies, and I'm sure I'll get told who I'm paraphrasing here, but it's like, if you try to make something that's for everyone, it's ultimately not going to be for anyone.
Right.
Because
right.
It just becomes so bland and like that boring college. That it's just like, why are we even here?
It's really true. Funnily enough, thankfully, the god himself, Mr. Masahiro Sakurai, with his brand new awesome YouTube channel, did that video the other day about finding the fun. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's a great video. And he had a theory that a lot of people didn't gel with, but I entirely think is true, is the more you go for broad appeal, the less the game appeal comes, right? Because it's such a balance between, there is a spectrum of human beings who enjoy all sorts of different things. And there's no way any game can one encompass all of those things. I think it's why Souls games are talked about so much, because there's so much positivity to it, but there's so much negativity that sort of balances itself out a little bit. But in this, it's, you try to broad appeal something. And then the actual appeal of the game comes down and comes to that sort of, you know, mediocre level, because it's almost like designed by committee, and that's a really tough thing to do.
That's true too, but he also said something in those videos about, you can't be a chef if you can't discern taste, right? And I think that
he's really dropping well, so because, many roasts in those videos.
That's great. That's very true though, because I think that the smart thing for someone like you to take the takeaway, I think, is to obviously analyze and absorb like a sponge all of this feedback, positive, negative, and everything, but then throw out the stuff that is not actually worth, you know, listening to, and apply the stuff that actually is. So like, if you were to make a sequel someday, you know, take the stuff that people that was like, oh, that was a good point, or that was something that we should have done better or whatever, and actually know to have that sense of like what is actually worth listening to and not is actually super important. So, right?
Yeah, exactly. One of the things we listened to immediately was, you know, there was an overwhelming amount of feedback, even from positive and negative reviews, that was, I can't see where I'm hitting the shot. Now, that was an intentional choice from the very off. But it's kind of weird that, you know, this is all of us who work in game development sort of being like, duh, right? But gamers maybe don't think that everyone will have been through the different phases of development. Of course, we had a zoomed out camera at some point, right? But the point was that the levels were designed, which is a complaint for some people, which is they're too big or stuff, is that they're designed so you don't see certain elements with the camera, because then it exposes the sort of solutions that you're meant to be looking for and finding out. So it's purposely designed. So when we add a zoom out camera, you're immediately, your one or two solutions becomes like five. And then it becomes like this overwhelming, either boring choice because there's an obvious path to take, or it's overwhelming and you don't really know what to do. And then it feels like, oh, the level just is randomly like thrown together and there's all these different pathways. Which is not the case with the static camera made. But the overwhelming point was that a lot of people are just so used to golf games, especially like Mario Golf or even Golf Story, which is zoom ahead to where you want to hit the shot.
Right.
Put the target here and then press it and it will go there. Which is so funny to me, just because real golf is absolutely nothing like that. Real golf is a sport where you don't even know where you're hitting it. It might be a massive hill or it might be a dog. There's a reason they're called dog legs. Like, they literally curve around where you can't see anything. And then all you have to do really is mentally sort of calculate, okay, I can see that's like a certain amount of distance away. If I use this club, then maybe I'll get there. And golf is this guessing game almost of like doing those mental calculations.
Totally. And I mean, in video game golf, though, like games like you're talking about, probably like Hot Shots and Mario Golf and stuff, the fun there is the elements that you can't control that can throw all, you can make that best guess and you can look at the dotted line, but there's wind and there's hills and there's, you know, different factors that play in that can randomize to some degree, or at least like make it harder for you to like mentally. I mean, if you're a super crazy mathematician, maybe you can figure it all out, but like otherwise you're going to have to like rely on a bit of luck and stuff. And like, I think with your game, I haven't tried this new version with the pulled out camera or whatever, but like the thing that I found myself using the right stick to look ahead all the time, but it still doesn't make it perfect for you, because at some point you have to kind of guess the trajectory and sort of assume things are going to happen a certain way. And they aren't necessarily going to happen that way. And that's the fun. Like, that's a big part of
that's
one of these kinds of games, I feel like.
That, that is exactly the sort of thing that we were going for, right? And I think a lot of people did gel with that because I think it's exposed through the positive reviews. Wow, this conversation, it seems very negative, but you know, I can't have expected anything better. But the whole point was that if you nail that shot, that's the satisfaction of what a real golf shot can be like. Like the idea you, the sort of amateur golfer or whatever, hits that shot and you nail it and you go over there and you're like, oh my God, I'm on the fairway and I'm like 100 yards from the hole. That's like the best shot of my life. And that satisfaction is incredible. And part of that was what I wanted to emulate with that original camera, as well as, you know, exposing certain level designs. I think if we were to have factored in the zoomed out camera from the beginning, then the holes would have just been larger because you have to hide things out of that periphery. And then they just become an unsurmountable, like, obstacle to get around. And then you have to make the power of the shot even further. But then that neutralizes the fact that you can't see anyway. So it's a weird thing. I think there's a reason there's no 2D side on golf games, really.
sure.
It is kind of its own thing. Everything's usually top down because you can see. But a big thing was, like, we took a lot of inspiration from stuff like Neo Turf Masters, right?
The Neo Geo game, right?
Yeah, the Neo Geo game. It's like the best golf game, and it's it just gives you information, and then with that information, you make the shot. And it doesn't have a cursor. It doesn't show you where it's going to go. It just gives you, like, here's how far you hit this club, here's how far that hole is, and here are the other little factors. And then you do that calculation yourself by looking and scouting things out. But yeah, that's a 25 to 30 year old game. So in 2022, I think that's a bit different, but that's fair enough. If people's patience is different, then we go with that thing. But I don't think it was right for us to launch without it and without this zoomed out camera that we added and see what it was like. And it was fine. But then adding it in as an optional thing for people to use, I think if that's the way you want to go, then the way you want to go.
How is it? Is it like turned off by default, but you can turn it on, or is it just the sort of thing that you can trigger with the button press at
any
time?
It's a toggle. Yeah, it's a toggle. You can have it in and out, and then if you have it out, it'll stay out on the next shot.
Oh, okay.
But it does, the one thing we don't want to compromise on is that, so you can zoom out to do your shot, but then as you hit the shot, it will always track into the normal view. So that periphery is like you're focused on the ball. It will always focus on the ball, and then you can spin, because spinning while you're this far out is kind of a difficult thing. Yeah, it's been really interesting. I, you know, you can, especially when it's your job and you know, you have to respond to all these things, it can be quite negative. The past 2 weeks have been quite exhausting because you have to read through a lot of the negativity. And as with anything, you know, you could read 1,000 good YouTube comments, but you get to that one negative and you focus on that for a long time. When it's your reviews, it's a bit tough. Thankfully,
of course, and also the very nature of feedback, though, is that people complain about stuff far more than they, because if they're happy, there's no reason for them to run to their channel and talk about it. Well, not as much reason. I mean, some people are really nice and they want to do that, but a lot of people will just, you know, you hear, we talk about this in localization all the time, but you hear a lot about what people didn't like, but you don't often hear about what people did like, because if they liked it, they were satisfied and they probably didn't even think so.
And like, how often do you review Steam games, right? Like, I play a lot of games on Steam and I don't review them at all, but because I generally don't think about them that much, whether if I'm enjoying them, I'm playing them, and then I'm not going to review it. But I think there is, you're a certain mindset. There are certain mindsets of consumers that who do review things that they definitely are going to write a review if it's negative. And that's like their mindset. And it's almost like they go into that. That's not an excuse whether they like the game or not, but I do feel like it's a different type of mindset. But it is right. It's like looking at that feedback and calculating and seeing, you know, okay, you could have a game that you launch and it has like 1,000 problems and then you don't know what to do. Thankfully, like a lot of this comes down to a few different things, whether it's taste or it's, you know, a certain like unexpected thing that they just didn't expect it to be not the kind of golf game they were wanting. And the other thing is, if you look at most of the, like, let's take the Steam negative reviews, for example, they are all under usually like 1.5 hours under, you know, that under that. So I can sort of gauge, I know exactly where they are in the game, and it's generally the tutorial and they've died once or they just don't want to do it again. And that's their experience.
They couldn't figure out the spin tutorial.
Yeah. Roy left three negative reviews.
One from each account. So you mentioned that you play a lot of Steam games and you don't generally leave reviews. Has this experience, is this experience going to change that? Are you yes. now going to type yeah. up three yeah. paragraph essays every time you think a game was not half bad? Or
I definitely would never leave a negative review, even if I didn't like it, just because it does have such an impact. I spent the better half of the past year since we last spoke trying to learn as much as I could about Steam algorithms. Even though we're launching an old platform, Steam is the one that is exposed. So you can just look at all of the data and like absorb it up. And I'm subscribed to like a newsletter that gives you, tips and information, and also, different Discord channels where people talk about the business side of these things. And having spent the better part of a year trying to understand these things, you sort of, when it happens and then it's your data that you're actually able to see, you can really see what changes make a difference. And yeah, Steam has like if you have like 80% of your reviews are positive, then you have like very positive. If it's under that, it's like mostly positive. If it goes to like 60%, it's like mixed. And then, that tag really in the consumer's brain, you can think they hover over like something on Steam and it says very positive. You're like, okay, pretty good. Like, and that number, like 100 people, 200 people, 1,000 people, that's a lot of people who are judging that game to be positive. If you hover over something that's like 50 reviews and mixed, that's like almost like a don't touch kind of thing. And then how would you ever escape out of that as the indie dev? So I definitely feel for those people just because of my own experiences. We are one of the lucky ones. We have a lot of reviews, which pushes the algorithm. It pushes it into people's periphery. Steam works in a weird way where it will only show your game to the people who like the tags that your game is. So it'll be like golf, roguelite, action, pixel art. It'll only show it to those people. But then if it gets enough traffic, it will show it to that next bubble that might be interested to it. And then that bubble keeps going. That's why everybody has bought Vampire Survivors and knows about it, because it just kept growing and growing and growing. So there's no real weird trick, but there are ways that you can sort of, look at these things. And
track.
Especially for indie creators, getting a positive review and really pushing it really does help. So, yeah.
Well, time for listeners, if you played the game and you liked it, to give it the 8.4 bump on Steam. I'm totally guilty of not reviewing stuff ever. Like, in fact, I use reviews. The only time I really use, I don't need to use reviews that much for games, for food, like when, restaurants, obviously, and then like Amazon stuff. Like if I need some random thing and I got to look on Amazon, I will look at the reviews and I will like prioritize ones from that, what they have, like, I forget what they call them, like, verified or something or other, whatever. But like, I bought a billion things on Amazon, but I don't think I've ever left a single review. So I don't know.
I left my first recently.
Was it a negative one?
It was, I bought a hitbox. Little button controller, because I play a lot of fighting games. It's like all I play, and this keycap is missing.
See, there it is. First review left is because there was something to complain about.
It's true, but it was mostly just because I wanted the cap sent to me.
Oh wow! Okay. I do that. I do want to say thank you for the fast forward. I don't know when you realized you needed a fast forward, but like.
I wish it was enough, Gabe. I wish it was enough. people just want to skip everything. I wish it was enough. It's not enough.
But so yesterday was my deepest run, and I got to the second boss.
Nice.
And it was a crushing failure of attrition, and that, like, I understand with the reviews of just like people, like maybe you get to the first boss after a lucky swinger or round or two, but like by the time I got to the second boss, I had a good groove going, and then like I took a chance on a shot, misjudged the timing of a card, because that timing is takes time to get used to, because it's like there's like that weird like 0.75 48 frame difference between when you hit the button and the effect takes place that you have to gauge. And I tilted so hard once I realized I was losing. Like I had enough cards for the boss to actually get to the hole. I tilted and I immediately lost the first round on the next round, like the first hole in the next round. Okay. Like it's got some high highs and some low lows.
As someone who hasn't made it this far, can I ask how do bosses work in this game?
It's a one-on-one. I mean, the first boss, at least, is a one-on-one, you know, challenge with, let's say, someone in the game. And, you know, you basically got to clear the stage before they do.
Yeah. It basically boils down to each boss fight is a race to the flag. But each boss has a certain different power of theirs that they can manipulate. So the first boss, I don't think it's any spoiler, really, is the Scotsman. And he can... He has that giant club, so he can, you know, really hit it really far, like almost double, well, more than double what you can hit it. So he almost takes two shots within your one. So every boss fight then stems down to you smashing these idols that are called stun idols, and then you can stun the boss for a turn, and then you can, you know, sort of recoup that sort of distance that you've
very cool lost. Stun animation, by the way. That is very memorable. Yeah. Like when you stun him, I was like, okay, that's impressive.
I like this. The second boss one is also good. Second boss one's also good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
the boss fight. So I'm like actually in the middle of a run that I had to stop because I got really busy like a week and a half ago. But I was like, you know, I'm on the second, I guess. I beat the first boss, and then like, I'm on my way to the second, I guess. And then that first boss fight, I lost the first time, but it was close. And the second time, I was like, okay, now I know, I understand the game a little more, and I was able to get through it. And at that level, it's just the first level, right? And so I know with roguelikes, typically they just get harder and harder and harder. And so I don't know where it's going to go. But I would say like at that point, it was comfortably like challenging enough, but not like super hard. It felt right. Like it felt good. Like to get through that level was like, okay, I, you know, I have to use my cards. I have to kind of like learn the mechanics that I've been taught so far and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I did think it was really long. Like it's a long fight. And so it made me nervous to keep playing. That might have been one reason why I paused it at that point, because I was like, okay, I want to get the second boss, but I don't know that I'm going to have time to go through a boss fight that long. But I think that's generally the whole structure of the game, right? The boss fights are pretty big, right? It's not like, because it felt like longer than like 18 holes of golf just to fight the one boss, kind of, you know what I mean? In terms of like, it's a really long way to the goal, much longer than anything that had come before it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's a balance that we kind of had to strike, which is you've only got essentially 18 levels you can play in one game mode because, you know, unless you really want to go back, the reality is you're probably not once you've completed it. Sure. So it's not artificial extension. What it is you have these very large holes that consist of multiple different paths. And there's always a main path, and that main path is the longest. It can take between 5 to 10 minutes. But depending on the different cards you have and depending on your familiarity with each hole, so if you're doing replays or you're running through, the balance then is that a hole can take a minute because you know the path you can go through.
To get to the end, right?
So for example, with the Scotsman, for example, there is you come to sort of a crossroads where you can go down or you can go through a teleporter or there's like TNT. Now, depending on what cards you have at that point, you can go through the teleporter with a U-turn or a rocket, or you could go down, which is the main path, or you could blow up this TNT, and with a certain card, like a U-turn, you could cross the water. Now, crossing that gap and going down that way leads you to a teleporter that can then basically cut out like half of the hole, and then you're finished with that boss fight in 5 minutes.
Right,
not spoilers, that's pro tips.
No, it's a hot tip, yeah.
It's this tough balance because a lot of, the feedback we've heard is that the holes are long, and then all I can sort of say is, like, I get it. That's your first experience with that hole. But
totally.
Depending on if you had, you know, if you go to the second area, it unlocks new cards that are far more powerful. Yeah. And with that, if you take those cards then into the first area on your next run or, you know, you have them in certain points, you can get hole-in-ones. And there's a reason there's an achievement called a hole-in-one because you can break a lot of the levels by just skipping half of it in one go.
That's cool. I love that there's that variety of possibility.
This brings up a very important question. Mm. What is the state of the Curse to Golf speedrunning community?
So we haven't seen yet like speedrunners in terms of time, but we have seen people because we have a leaderboard and it's a typical golf leaderboard where the lowest score is the highest. Wow. We've seen like people doing crazy runs where they store loads of cards because you can store cards in the game for future runs. And I didn't think breaking 100 would be possible, but some dude is now in like 45. So people really are like, one guy got like four hole-in-ones in a run, which shows you the sort of like breadth of your first run is going to probably take you 300 plus shots, but then you can get it down to 45 depending on how you play and what paths you take. And one person posted on Reddit that they finished it with no cards. And I did not think that was possible. I didn't think you could finish it with no cards. And one person did.
Wow.
Like, that's crazy.
That is crazy. That sounds incredibly difficult.
It's super, super difficult and probably, you know, it's almost like no damage runs in like a Souls game. It is like a patience and complete focus.
right.
Because if you mess up a shot, you can't mulligan, you can't do it again. So that's like every shot perfect. But I take a lot of that as like the positive side of it. It's like you have such a like open, large chasm of different players who are able to get through it. And they're like, oh, that took me 500 shots or something. And then others, well, one, if you finished it, that's amazing. Like how many people finish roguelikes versus, you know, the fact that this person is now absolutely within 1 week of it being out, destroying it. I feel like that's a pretty good situation to be in.
Right.
Speedrunning is going to be really interesting. Like my dream is that if somebody just does it in ADGQ, I've like, that's full circle for me. I'm like,
you've now made it. That's it.
I made it. Like, that's it. That's full circle. Yeah. So it's really cool. We've collated a whole bunch of feedback, you know, aside from the fact that we're just fixing bugs and making sure the stability keeps going. We added in very quickly the zoom toggle just because it made sense to do it based on the immediate feedback. Now is a case of looking at what is missing. Because the reality is the game was made in only a year and a half. So many things were cut. The reality of video game development and like decisions being made is somewhere in that mix why things are the way they are.
Mark Hamill demanded it be out by a certain release date.
Exactly. Mark was like, video. I'm filming a movie at this point. I need it for my Steam Deck. Like, you know, you gotta do it. So I think there's loads of things that I think about when I look at other games that I wish Ghost of Golf had. The reality is we don't have an artist. We don't have these people full time. We just had contracted people that we worked with. And, you know, those contracts end. And then you're like, well, we can't make any more art assets. So we can't add these features in very quickly. And yeah, it's been amazing to see people enjoying it. That's the most important part. Like, I just make games so people can have fun. And, you know, even having John, you know, notoriously picky John right here saying that he enjoyed it and giving me his honest feedback is great. And yeah, it's really good. I just appreciate people playing it. So yeah, it's been really cool.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Did you guys want to dive into your Souls thing?
I was gonna segue.
Because I do have to disappear. I'm gonna just quietly vanish at some point during this podcast, but I definitely want to hear about this whole thing that's going down now with Tina trying out.
We'll catch up on Tina, and then how about afterwards we go to break, and then we'll do the news and the rest of the show, and those that need to bounce can bounce. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
I got a thumbs up from Liam. I only needed one. Excellent. All right, Tina, I called you pale blood, not because of your complexion.
Although, you know, you had not a lie was spoken. SPF 75 over here.
But your Twitter poll, massively successful. They guided you down the road of Bloodborne from Software. That was 2014, 15, one of those. Tina,
it was when The Witcher 3 came out, so 2014.
I guess that tells us which one you were playing at that time.
it tells you which one I dropped for the other.
Oh
snap! So, Tina, why don't you regale us with tales of Yharnam and all of that?
Overwhelmingly, I feel extremely accomplished because I felt so much more confident going into this one because I was like, all right, I know what the fuck is up now. So, and I'm going to keep this fairly spoiler free because although it is not the newest of games, John has not played it. So
actually, just to clarify. Yeah. I played like the demo and then I played a little of the game. I just haven't given it the whole full.
Okay. Well then you lied to me.
Or my From Software, shrink wrap. Like, I think they're out of the shrink wrap, but yeah, I only played them like very briefly when they first came out.
Oh, okay. Well, then I won't be as careful as I was going to be. So if you...
It's fine. I'm not worried about being... Plus, from games have like... The one thing they're not good at is story. So like, I'm not really worried about being spoiled.
What one in particular has Spicy. A very cool reveal that I don't think Tina has gotten to yet.
So, anyway. Like,
spoiler.
Okay, so I'll get a little bit spoilery in terms of like the first couple of hours of the game. If anybody listening is like super... wants to preserve the beginning of the game for themselves.
Yeah, we'll time code it.
When I first started Elden Ring, I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. And then a giant monstrosity immediately destroyed me. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? I just got here. This time, I was like, all right, they're going to drop me in a place and they're going to make me fight a thing, but I'm woefully underprepared. And then that's when the game is actually going to start. I fucking got your number from Soft. And I walk into a room and there's a big fucking wolf dealing. And I'm like, I'm about to fuck up this wolf with my bare hand. And I got that wolf down to like a quarter of its fucking health with my bare hands. And I know you're not supposed to be able to beat it. So like, I don't feel bad that I died, but I gave it a good fight.
Wow.
And that in itself felt like a great victory.
Nice.
So then, of course, you know, it destroyed me and the game actually started as I thought it would. And it was spooky and neat. This game's full of like little wailing dudes, eh? It's full of little dudes.
Oh yeah, the messenger people.
So many little dudes. I think I'm gonna play offline for the most part.
You don't like them?
They're very intrusive.
What are the wailing guys that you're talking about? Are they not the notes?
Yeah, the messages and the tombs, the tombstones where people have died.
Yeah.
They're a lot more intrusive visually than they were in Elden Ring. Like Elden Ring, it's a flat pool of blood or a flat glowing message. Mm-hmm. And this is like blood flying like a foot off the ground or like dust floating in the air. And I keep getting the shit scared out of me because I see something moving out of the corner of my eye and it's just somebody else has died there. And I'm not digging that. So I'm probably going to turn it off. But
I think having no messages would really put you at a bit of a disadvantage.
I find that I'm not reading them. I read a lot of messages in Elden Ring and I just run right past them in this.
Huh.
Like I don't know. I'm not really paying attention to them.
You're just so confident now.
Yeah. I'm just unstoppable.
I mean, you can read all so many times before you get the joke.
But I don't know. It feels a lot easier than Elden Ring was. And I don't know if that's true or just because I'm more prepared than I was. Because I was so completely unprepared for Elden Ring when I went into it. I had no idea what was going to happen. And now...
Quick question.
Yes.
Are you an aggressive player?
Like I hammer that attack button and force my way through shit? Or
are you like a holding your shield and waiting patiently? Or are you just straight in there attacking?
Oh, I'm fucking running in there, hammering that attack button, like dodging a dude and then just like smashing that button more. And that got me into trouble in Elden Ring a lot of the time because I didn't know when to dip.
Yeah, that's why Bloodborne's so cool. Rewards you for doing that. Idiots the thing? Like me it's like, get rewarded.
I can just
it's awesome.
Run up to a dude and just hit him 5 times in a row and he dies. That was like unheard of in Elden Ring. That would never happen. You know? And not to say that I'm complaining about it. It just feels a lot easier to play in general.
It's almost like that's what they were trying to go for. They had, you know, Dark Souls where everyone played defensively with shields and patiently, and then they're like, well, we don't really want people to do that again. So instead, if you get hit, as long as you hit the guy back, you get all your health back and you know, it's cool.
I love that. I love it. It's so satisfying to be like, you get, you know, punched in the face and be like, fuck you right back and punch him back and actually get something for it. I was initially really concerned that my healing item was a consumable. Like initially big point of concern for me. But it hasn't turned out to be bad. I thought that there was going to be like a kind of miserable situation at the outset where like, I haven't hoarded enough of them and it's, you know, not going to work out, but so far it seems fine. I had to kind of train myself to like, if you've just killed a dude and you're about to ransack his body and you've got enough health gone, heal yourself first, just in case he's going to give you a vial, because a vial getting sent to storage isn't useful to me now. But if I heal now and then pick up another vial that's going to replenish my inventory, like that's a different kind of resource management that Elden Ring didn't have.
Yep.
Where like Elden Ring, I was doing the thing of like, oh, there's one dude left in this group of people. I'm going to heal now so that when I kill him, it's going to recharge my flask. So it's sort of like a reprogramming of that thought process. John, you just made a face.
No, it's okay.
Can I ask why one of the greatest video games of all time wasn't on that list for your poll? Why was Sekiro not on there?
So there is a reason. That reason being it is intimidating to me. That's genuinely the reason.
Intimidating how or why?
It just based on what I've been told about it, because I try not to read too much. I like to know not much going in. But I was told that that one focuses very hard on physical attacks and precision. There's not a whole lot of like magic kind of things. I leaned kind of hard into the magic in Elden Ring. I liked using it. I summoned a lot in Elden Ring, and that's not an option in Sekiro, I guess.
No.
And since this is going to be my first FromSoft game, because Elden Ring's my first FromSoft ever, so this is going to be like, you know, okay, am I going to go into the back catalog and enjoy it or not? I felt like if I started with Sekiro, that might be setting myself up for failure.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, so the three that I had picked were like, they seem like the best chances for success, you know?
Yeah, it's the thing with Sekiro, and correct me if I'm wrong, is like you're kind of limited. Like, there's not as much combat flexibility with like weapon types and all that stuff. You're just katana, you're just parry and all that stuff. You have the little arm gadget thingies, but
it's interesting because I agree. It in a microcosm, it is more limited. Like, I think that's just because you don't have more options. But I do think from the combat perspective, it is the most varied and the most like skill based version of all.
Isn't
of
it more
games.
Of a technical combat? I haven't played Sekiro.
It's like it's like playing Street Fighter. That's what it's right. like to me. It's like an action street.
Go
like,
on.
You have to learn how to play it, right? Like it's not just swing the sword and the sword does a certain amount of damage or roll and this. It's like I have to parry, then attack, and then I'm going to do this attack combined with this magic to then stun them to keep them. It's almost like trying to do like a block string in fighting games and stuff like that. That's why I've always really enjoyed, because you have to become good. Like, I hate get good, but you have to become good at Sekiro to be able to do it. And I think
that's why I don't think it's for me.
I think that's what makes the difference. You can even, you know, stack magic, or you can just stack all your points and certain things in the other games and wail your way through it. But with Sekiro, unless you can, you know, become what Sekiro wants you to be, the samurai that you were born to be, you can't really pass it. And that's what I found so magical about it. It's like one of a kind.
I really need to play it because it really sounds like my kind of game. I always was into those kind of games as well. I mean, especially when I was younger and had more time to like dig in and learn. Because the problem is, if you don't have time to get good, and I say that literally, I'm not trying to be like snarky or whatever, but like if you don't have the time to invest to actually develop the skill to play the game, then the game is not going to be enjoyable. So like,
yes.
And that's a problem. That those two things are at odds with each other. Like, because like I would love to have the time to get into it and play it and then get, but the problem is like I only have a little bit of time, and so I'm just gonna end up hurting the game for myself. And I really think that's a big part of why it's still sitting on my shelf. Like, I do want to play it someday, but I have this sort of weird like space for it with a whole bunch of other games that are like the games I will probably get to like when I retire or like take like a 3-month sabbatical or something, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
It's definitely something that needs time. It like one of its fundamental mechanics is this thing called the Mercury counter, and it's basically like Street Fighter 3 Alpha's not Alpha, Third Strike's like parry mechanic, which is hard to do. And it's like unless you get good at like being Daigo at Street Fighter, you can't play. And that's what's so cool about it to me.
I think that's something I'm appreciating about Bloodborne is I never once I think landed a single successful parry in Elden Ring. Like, after a while, I just stopped bothering to try. I was like, this isn't for me. I'm not going to do this. I'm really enjoying shooting a motherfucker in the face in the middle of his attack. I actually sucker punch him. It's great.
Is that a timing based? Another timing based thing, basically.
Yeah, and I don't know why it feels so different, or like it feels so much more intuitive. Maybe it's more generous with the timing. I don't know. When a dude is winding up a big attack at you, if you just be like motherfucker, no, and shoot him in the face instead, it'll do the thing where they get stunned, and you can go in and do your vicious attack or whatever it's called. I don't know.
I actually wanted to ask about how your experience was with Gascoigne, like one of the first bosses, because that's really the, like, did you learn to play this game boss or not? And when I saw that on Twitter that you had beat him, I was like, oh man, we got to talk about that.
So it's fun playing this having played Elden Ring, because I'm seeing all these things that I'm realizing, like, oh, this is this game's that thing. You are this game's Melina, this is this game's, you know, Sight of Grace, this is how all of these different things work. And I got to that guy and was like, you are this game's Margit. You are the person who is like, you shall not pass until you prove to me that you've actually learned what you're doing.
And
he wasn't that bad. Margit was like horrific and like life ending for me. It was a nightmare. He stopped me for like a month or something. Gascoigne, I tried, I think, 3 or 4 times, maybe 4 or 5 times. And then I was like, all right, this isn't going well, because I wasn't getting more than like a third of the way through his health bar. So I was like, this is not going well. I'm going to level up a little bit and then come back. So I think I got like 3 or 4 levels and went back and got him on my second try.
Nice.
So he wasn't as miserable. My weapons are, I picked the simplest gun, the one that's not a blunderbuss.
Yeah,
blunderbuss is a very memorable name. The other one is not. And the saw thing that's on the cover of the game.
The saw like, cleaver. Okay,
yeah.
Solid choices.
I looked on the internet and was like, you know, weapons for beginner Bloodborne, and it was like, just pick these two, you'll be fine. I was reading the descriptions. I was like, that cane sounds pretty cool. And then the internet was like, don't use the cane if you've never played this game before. And I was like, all right, never mind.
It's pretty fly. I like the cane. So I think actually the saw cleaver is the speedrunner's weapon of choice, actually.
I'm really enjoying it. I really like the trick weapon thing of like, you know, you have only this one weapon, but it does two different things. So if you need, you know, a little bit more reach, you can do that.
Little monster.
And the fact that I can flip that thing out and flip it back while I'm running without breaking pace feels so good. Like the fact that my dude doesn't slow down to do that and then pick up, right? It's just like full speed running, swing, motherfucker, and go for it. Feels great.
Nice.
Feels real good. I did get the music box. I had the music box.
Okay.
For Gascoigne as well. That seems important. Of course I did.
Okay. Did you go, oh no, the story?
I went back and was like, oh, this is sad.
Yeah.
I'm a human with feelings. I also went back again recently and that window was dark and silent. And I was like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I will say Elden Ring is probably the most positive From Software game.
I haven't been through Sephiroth.
I don't know the side quests, but it has literally the most happy endings by having the most non-bad endings.
Oh no.
Like, it's just on the spectrum, it is the most positive because it's just a lack of negative and bad endings for all the side quests.
Oh boy. Okay, noted. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like a bad bitch when I'm playing it, and it's really fun.
Nice.
I haven't gotten into like anything super, super spooky yet, because I think I'm just too early days for it. I just yesterday for the first time encountered something that wasn't exactly human anymore. Like basically it's been humans and like dog things.
Were humans and
yeah. And I ran into my first thing that was like a fucking weird octopus witch monster that drank my brains.
Those things.
And I thought she was just like a little dude. So I was like, I'll beat you up like the little dude that I think you are. And then she drank my brains. And I was like, oh, fuck. I didn't sign up for this. So I ran away, as one does. Yep. And I ran away all the way back through town to like go to my lamp of safety and was like, whew, that was close. And then I fucking turn around and she is right behind me.
Oh,
and that has not happened yet. Every other enemy so far, as soon as I run more than like you know, 2 feet away, they're like, yeah, never mind, forget it. This bitch followed me all the way across town and scared the absolute shit out of me. Like, I turned around and saw her and genuinely was like, oh, fuck! And, oh. But I beat her, and it was fine. Nice. I remained victorious.
Very cool.
Not a single death yet. I have not died a single time.
Damn, pro gamer. Wow.
Pro gaming
that
over
is,
here.
That is
everything. First try.
I don't know if Elden Ring is the greatest of examples, considering, but do you feel a difference in the performance considering Bloodborne is 30 frames and on?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's like the thing that
hampers
people.
They never patched it, right? They never made it 60. That's so weird.
No.
I can't tell the difference. My eyes don't care. I just don't. I'm sure if I saw them side by side, if I went straight from one to the other, I would notice, but.
Yeah.
I spend half my time playing Nintendo 64 games, so like, I'm not, you know, the most.
All you need is like 7 or 8 frames, and you're good to go.
Can I tell there's motion? We're fine. Fine. Yeah, so that hasn't been a problem for me.
How are you liking? I feel like Bloodborne has the best story out of all of the most cohesive kind of like big picture story. Yeah. And I know you're very motivational. Like, what's my character want and why? How are you feeling about that stuff?
That feels a lot, so far, a lot more successful in this one for me. Mm-hmm. Again, probably because I kind of already had an idea of what to expect, where sure. with Elden Ring I didn't. But with Elden Ring, you wake up and they're like, you know, you are one of the Tarnished, blah, 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 blah. Here's the shit you need to do. And it's like, everybody kind of already knows what I'm supposed to be doing. And it seems like I do too. Versus Bloodborne, you're like, what the fuck? Why are you doing this to me, little dudes? Stop. And then you wake up in a place and you have no idea where you are. And I feel like she has no idea where she is either. And people keep saying to me like, oh, you're an outsider and you're here on the night of the hunt. Gosh, that sucks. And I feel like she doesn't know what that shit means either. And it makes it a lot more like relatable for me. Like, we're in this together, you know. She doesn't know what's up and neither do I, and it feels a lot more interesting in that way.
Maybe after you beat it as many times, maybe after you've seen all the endings you want to see, there is some debate going on in the like, what is the motivation of the player character that is kind of up in the air, and of course From Software will never clarify, but I'm curious once you've gone through what you think.
Well, right now it feels like she's just trying to not fucking die.
Sure.
You know, like that's kind of all it feels like right now, but I'm still early. I think I've beaten only one major boss so far. I think Gascoigne's the only one that counts, but I've done like a couple of
Bloodstarved Beast.
I did the clear. Yeah, I did the Cleric Beast, Gascoigne, and the Blood... What was it?
Bloodstarved Beast.
That one.
Yeah, so one thing I want to say, and this is just sort of a, like, just to keep you entertained, when you beat the Bloodstarved Beast, you got a little chalice thing, and then it explained the chalice dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
Do not feel compelled. It is entirely optional if you... Because a lot that is probably Bloodborne's strongest criticism, is that the Bloodborne chalice dungeon stuff is probably the most lacking, because it's supposed to be semi procedurally generated stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a little bit of research on what that is, because I was like, this and from what I read, it seems like it's catacombs and a fun place to run around with your friends as a, you know, versus proceeding in the game. So I just haven't touched it at all yet. I just don't really
you
care.
You do not need to touch it at all. If you want the platinum, you have to go through the like main route, but don't worry about it. Like, just if you're feeling a chalice dungeon, go ahead, but like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna ignore that for a while, probably. Totally. If my experience with Elden Ring is any indication of how this is gonna go, when I become desperate for more stuff to do because I've done absolutely everything else, those will be waiting for me.
Cool. And I think John's getting ready to say, hey, we got a break. He's typing right now.
I just realized I'm not muted while I'm typing. Sorry about that. Everybody can hear me making my escape message. Yeah, I got to go. So I'm going to just quietly hold my breath and dip under the water, and then I'll be gone.
No, we're going to go to break, John, because I got to get that file from you. So, all right. So we'll be back. Liam, will you be joining us for a bit longer, or are you going to go too?
I think I probably should go, actually, unfortunately.
All right. Well,
I don't want to be in trouble.
No. When the show comes back, it'll just be the Triforce of the 8-4 Play podcast. So we'll be back in a jiffy. Tina, you had some extra thoughts you wanted to share on Bloodborne before we move on here. What was it that you wanted to say?
Oh, I accidentally shot the lore man. Is that guy who's sitting in the hunter's base or the hunter's dream? And he was talking to me, explaining to me what's up. And then he says, please feel free to use all of our facilities. Even the doll, if you like. And I was so viscerally distressed by this sentence, I accidentally hit my trigger button and shot him. And he just disappeared into a cloud of dust. And I was like, oh my God, I destroyed my only tie to the lore of this game. Fuck.
Interesting.
Oh no. And immediately, frantically started Googling, like, accidentally shot Gerard, whatever his name is. And there were a million people. Accidentally shot guy in Hunter's Dream. What do I do? And basically the internet was like, don't worry, he doesn't hold a grudge. He'll be there next time you reload into Hunter's Dream. I was like, oh, thank God. Accidentally sawed the doll in the face one single time. And so I felt so bad. I felt so bad.
Speedrunners actually kill her to level up.
Because you can level up faster without having to talk to her first?
Well, no, because she teleports all over the place, too. But if you kill her, she just stays in one spot.
Yeah.
Monsters. She responds. Absolute monsters.
Don't worry, she's into it. She's into it. It's all good.
I find her extremely soothing. I realize, she's supposed to be, right? Like, she's the cozy presence that's always waiting for you when you get back,
But just except for Dark Souls 1. All of the level up mechanics, Elden Ring is sort of different. The level up is a maidenly woman who was just
Elden Ring. She was there, but I did my own shit most of the time, right? Versus welcome home, good hunter. I'm like, huh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Also, you find your worth in the waking world.
That's good.
What a fucking metal line. That is so good.
Yeah, Bloodborne is easily the most quotable of all the Souls games, far and away. After you play this game.
Oh, there's an item description. Sorry, I interrupted you. There's an item description that's like a hat for the messengers or something. And it was like, they seem to enjoy accessorizing, and why not let them revel as babes or whatever? And I was like, this writing is fucking phenomenal.
All right, cool. So Roy,
so
Tina, anything else you want to say with Bloodborne before we completely shift gears?
I mean, frankly, I could talk about it for a very long time, but the game's real goth and metal and looks real cool, and I'm excited for it to disturb me in new and exciting ways.
I can't wait. Roy, we've both been putting time into Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Yeah.
The story continues, and man, is it story. I've said this is my first Xenoblade ever, and I'm like, man, there's a lot here. So maybe you already knew, but I didn't.
No, so I assume you're talking about the pacing of the story.
Yeah.
That is, I'm finding much different. It really feels like, because they're all open world games, and a lot of them, they have this feeling like, okay, you're kind of situated here. This is like your home base, but hey, you've got this whole world you can run around and explore. There's 10 million NPCs. They all want to give you far too many sub quests that you could do forever. But yeah. This one really feels like they're like, nope, just keep going, keep moving, go to the next thing, keep advancing forward. And I really do want to do that. I think I said this in the first time we talked about it, but not only is it like the objectives aren't terribly far away. Like usually it's just walk to the next marker on the map.
Yeah.
But also the pacing and content of the story is like really engaging. There's lots of like, you know, I think we said about 10 to 15 hours in, both of us.
Yeah, I actually checked my save during the break and I'm about 17 hours and change.
And there's been a lot of like first they established the world as you know it, and I think they've already smashed that like 3 times now. Like it's everything has been upended.
They've done the thing of like acknowledging how messed up the world is, and like already we're moving beyond that, and it's just like I that story wise mechanically, I'm still getting tooltips of like, hey, here's this brand new thing that you can now do. And I'm like, I'm 17 hours in. When does it, like, not that I'm upset, but like, when does it stop? How much? It's almost like Elden Ring. Just like, how much game is here? How much JRPG is here? To the point, like, and I'm completely satisfied. Like, I feel so bad for Xenoblade Chronicles. This is almost like, in school when you knew who the valedictorian was going to be, like you knew who the best student in your class was. So that wasn't the achievement. The achievement was actually getting second place, because Elden Ring is going to be the game of the year. No questions asked. But Xenoblade Chronicles, like any other year, I would say Xenoblade Chronicles 3 would probably be my number one game.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's, I wish it ran better. But it is like, it is so solid of just like, I unlocked guest characters that are permanent. And I was just like, whoa, this is like
really
fantastic. I'm also like old school in my JRPGs. Parties are 3 or 4 people. This is bad. And here it's 6, sometimes 7.
Yeah, you are.
It sounds to me like this is really like scratching all of the itches that you wished that Chrono Cross was going to.
Because
all of these things that you're saying could basically be applied to Chrono Cross.
No, because Chrono Cross says that's a 98% chance of hitting. Xenoblade don't lie.
I'm not arguing with you on that point, Gabe.
I'm coming okay. down. I'm coming down.
All I'm saying is it's unfortunate that was such a swing and a miss for you, because maybe you know, back in the day, Gabe would have really liked it. But I'm glad that this game is giving you that.
I watched my older brother play Chrono Cross for a good chunk of time, because he owned the PlayStation. Owned, you know, 13-7 doesn't count, but like he had the PlayStation, so I got to watch him play. He wouldn't let me play it, so. Xenoblade, it's really good. I'm really liking it.
Another thing I wanted to go back to, like in the first time we talked about it, I mentioned how I was like, oh, it feels kind of slow compared to like Final Fantasy 14 or whatever. Like I only have these 3 buttons to press. So a lot of time is just spent cooldown.
Yeah.
But now I think I'm like about where you are as far as they've taken off all the things that were, all the hidden mechanics are visible now. So like there's like, you can transform into things. You can combine attacks now. Yeah, it's there's so much more going on now. A lot. Yeah. To be fair, though, a lot of it, like if you're just in a field fighting 3 rabbits, you're never going to use some of this stuff because you're going to kill things so quickly. And a lot of them require any number of gauges to all fill up from doing the same thing over and over again. So. Yeah. But they are there, and it does make like boss battles kind of feel almost like someone saying, here, just like run free. You have this huge HP bar where you can just like do everything to it.
It sounds like this is a mechanics playground.
Yeah.
Kind of is. And I remember I had the similar concern too of just like, yeah, we're just sort of waiting for cooldowns to refresh, but like it's gotten busy enough. It's still not overwhelmingly busy.
Yeah.
But it is still like, yeah, this is like I'm engaging. If stuff is cooling down, I'm actually thinking about positioning and stuff, or maybe I like switching characters to someone else. I actually found the most success playing as a healer and then like using the focus attack tactic where everyone targets who you're targeting. And then they all, like, everything melts. And because basically the AI sucks at healing. So when you're controlling the healer, I'm way more successful. Like, there have been boss NPCs in the world and stuff that I've lost miserably to. And then when I switch to controlling a healer, everything clicks and the characters do all the fun stuff.
Yeah, that's another thing that we got at some point after we last talked about it, is now any character can turn into any job.
Yeah.
And like, they develop that job to the point where they can use some of the skills and stuff for it on other jobs. So you can like really customize, especially like if you have a tank, there's two tank jobs, there's like two of every type of job. So if your tank does like both tank jobs, then they can take over some of the abilities from the other tank, and then they're just really good at tanking. Or you can mix and match and do weird stuff.
So I will spoil this for you, Roy. I hope you don't mind, but you said two of each at first.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
There may be a character in your party who probably has back issues because of the shape of her. You may be able to be her class.
Okay.
Just so you know.
All right.
I've been intrigued by the Xenoblade games for a while. We talked about this before.
Yeah.
But now this conversation is making me think maybe it is not for I. Because mild spoilers for Octopath Traveler alert.
Okay.
In Octopath Traveler, you got like your eight dudes and they each have, you know, their personality and it's their job and their thing that they're good at. And you eventually get the ability to give them an additional one. And so then you can sort of have people start multi-classing.
Yeah.
And that's where I dropped off. I didn't finish that game. I loved that game and I really enjoyed playing it. But that was about the point in the game where I was like, wait, this is a lot of things happening and something else distracts. I think I started playing Nier Automata instead or something. And I just never went back to it.
To be fair, when I got to that point in Xenoblade where they're like, now you can do all this shit, I was kind of like, oh, this seems like a lot of shit. And I was just like, I'm gonna open the menu and I'm going to just chill and try to like focus on this for 5 to 10 minutes, which was a very different kind of pace and game experience.
I think it would just tick you off because it is a game of pop-ups or explaining.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is show a tooltip. And then when you go to the menu, there's the little indicator of you have unread blah. So you go to the tips and it's like, oh, I just read this. Thank you for, and there's no like filter by unread.
I was initially really, really annoyed with Elden Ring for not giving me enough information. And I have now come around. I need you guys to fuck off with 90% of the information yes. you're giving me. Yeah. I don't need it.
Elden Ring gives you way more than any From Software.
I'm gonna derail everything back to Bloodborne. There's no fucking map, and I was like, bro, there's no map. What? But as soon as I started playing, I was like, I don't want a map because that would ruin everything.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, we're not talking about Bloodborne anymore. But
the
thing of pop-up window with a helpful hint that I have to press a button to then close it.
Yeah,
like, I went off about that with Monster Hunter, and I don't think I will ever be won over to that. I don't want it.
In regards to like the class, did you ever play Bravely Default?
Tina? I did not.
Okay, Roy.
I played the 3DS one. Yeah,
there are two that are 3DS. I'm like, which one?
I don't know. I just remember there was a sequel. I didn't play the sequel. I played the first one.
But it is similar to that where like. Because you can level up other jobs in Xenoblade Chronicles 3, there's like a skill that you can then attach to the character in a way that you could in Bravely Default, where like, oh, okay, you unlock this ability and you can attach this ability regardless of what job you are in Bravely Default. So it is that, but it is way more limited to like three things that open up at like level 10, 30, 20, 30, or 40. So like, it is the onboarding, I think, is pretty okay, but it is still like I had to get stuff wrong. And this is one of those things of like, I refuse to look up how to optimize this stuff until after I've beaten the game, because that's part of the fun of figuring out all this weird stuff. But like, I also didn't realize this. There's like different people have different affinities for all the jobs. So like, don't make the dancer girl, the like shield tank, big sword tank, because she sucks at it. Mm-hmm. Like that is there, and I was like, whoa, that's kind of cool. A bummer, it's only with the six. Oh, there's more jobs. So I don't feel it's one of those things of when I start the game, I don't feel like playing the game all the time, but once I start, I'm done for 3 hours, if that makes sense, of just like, yeah, maybe I'll play Xenoblade. Oh, whoa, it's 10:30. I gotta wake up at 5 a.m. tomorrow. This is gonna be a bad thing. This is a bad day.
that's a good thing to be able to say about a game though, because I do find that there are some games where you can just like sink into it and it's suddenly hours later and you're like, shit, how did that happen? And then there are some games that really, you know, they don't necessarily feel like a chore, but you are aware of the time that is being spent on the activity.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just, and you're like, I don't think I have the energy for this anymore right now. I'm gonna do something else.
Yeah. I also don't
like the best feeling.
They do something I don't like, but it's kind of influencing me. I feel it where you go to the character menu and like the second to last option is expansion pass. And then you touch expansion pass and it's like, press Y to purchase the DLC. Here's what you get now. Here's what you get soon.
Oh, Gabe, it's so easy. Just a single button press away. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, my dude.
We'll see.
I feel like I will do it at some point, but I also feel like it's a little grimy that it's just in there.
Yeah.
It's part of like something about, I think I talked about this already, but the second one having like a built-in gacha system also just felt grimy to me.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
So it's like they reduced the grime, but it's still there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things too, is like the sort of guest character system seems to be the like gotcha thing, because when you go to the expansion pass, it's like, get this extra party member that can join as a seventh thing. And I'm like, is this what Xenoblade Chronicles 2 did with the extra things?
Because probably like, they did.
Here you're doing them in quests, but in 3 you're doing them in quests, but here like you can like toggle them in and out, storyline permitting. So that's like got me like,
So those DLC, those DLC purchase prompts are like in the game's UI.
Yeah.
Like, so you know,
like,
in, like,
while you're playing.
When you hit, yeah, like you know when you hit triangle in Final Fantasy and you're in the like items.
Yeah.
Magic, expansion pass. System.
I see. Because my initial reaction was like, well, you want to make the DLC easy to access, right? Like having a, you know, explore DLC options button from your main menu or whatever totally makes sense. But
yeah,
in the game menu is a little different. That definitely feels like they're kind of buying into the FOMO aspect of like, oh well, shit, what could be here that I don't have?
To be fair, like these games are all always so massive that I always have a moment where I'm playing and where I'm like, this is just a single player MMO. Like how do they afford to only charge $60 once with how much content there is here? So like on the same token, I'm like, they deserve another $30 probably, or however much it is.
We'll see. Like it is.
See, with that single sentence, you kind of made me think about maybe doing it again, because an MMO without other people, fucking
straight up, like straight, like,
got my name written all over it.
I kid you not, it is a console single player MMO experience. Like stuff is clicking with me, and like because I already know the language of MMOs that this RPG system is aping on. I think Roy, it's time for the news, Roy, and special request. You asked for a new news theme.
Oh shit.
I
you didn't ask for a new news theme, you asked for not the old news theme.
Yeah, that's more specific.
Wait,
what I was doing that.
I was going to say, can I guess what this is going to be? But I don't want to be correct and ruin the joke. So never mind.
All right. So
whatever it's going to be.
Let's take it to the news right now.
News.
Outstanding.
I hope that's okay for us to use that.
It's a Roy special. Probably not fair use. We love you, Capcom.
Big longtime fans of Monster Hunter on this podcast.
Totally. Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm sure we've convinced some people to at least try it over the years.
You at least got me to play it.
And you didn't care for it.
They got my money, and that's what matters.
I bought it.
I bought and paid for it, and I played it, and then I didn't play it anymore. But that's not what matters.
Speaking of MMOs, Roy, I have fallen off Final Fantasy 14 pretty hard. I don't know about you, but I saw this article by... go ahead.
I just want to preface this with, I didn't realize that this next patch for me to play with all the goodies required me to clear the Endwalker story. So I signed in day one of the patch, give me my fucking island. I'm gonna start farming and shit. I take a picture on my phone of the patch notes. It tells you like the coordinates to go to get to meet the NPC to get the quest. So I'm looking at my phone. I go there. There's a big circle of players just standing, looking at an empty spot. And I'm like, why don't I have a person standing there?
How far away from clearing Endwalker are you?
I'm at the level 89 quests and it goes up till 90. So it's not too far.
Okay. So you're almost there. It could be a lot worse.
Yeah. But towards the end, it gets kind of dense. So
yes.
Stuff's going a little slow.
This is one of the most cutscene heavy expansions they've ever done, and it's fantastic for it. But
is there a reason that you haven't done it yet? Like, are you saving it, or are you just like haven't really felt like it? Or,
I think it actually it was Elden Ring. Mm-hmm. I think Elden Ring just totally derailed all progress. And now coming back to it is tough because there was so much that happened and so many crazy long names that I keep asking Sarah, I'm like, which guy's that? Like, luckily she remembers because.
Oh, that's good.
I'm getting old.
Yeah. As Roy hinted, that was basically why I put it in the news. Patch 6.2, Final Fantasy 14 added an island for you to just farm, to just like grow crops, probably sell them for scripts, maybe get materia out of them.
You can also like catch wildlife like sheep and stuff. And apparently they have a system where, almost like Pokemon, there's like shiny versions of each of the animals you can catch. Yeah. Shoot.
How much are they just going to fucking shit on every single other game out there? Like,
hey
guys, we got, I'm saying this as a good thing. Like, hey guys, we have this entire fucking Final Fantasy RPG, plus how many other full Final Fantasy games worth expansions. And also, we're just going to fucking throw Animal Crossing in here, too, because why not? We care about our people. Like, the flex is out of control.
I am very happy for 14's success. Maybe it says more about me and or maybe society when I saw the, like, oh, it would be nice to just make a farm and raise some wild, maybe get away from it all. You know.
I don't know if you've seen how much space they give you, but it's massive too. Like when they say an island, it's like, I don't know. I was thinking like one of the Hawaiian islands. It's like Madagascar.
Whoa. That's pretty cool.
Does everybody have, I'm sorry, I'm going to
go for it.
I've got questions. Does everyone have the same island, or is it like everyone's island is a little bit different?
I think everybody does have the same, but I think there is some level of customization as far as like what you put where. I wish I knew more about like, you know, if it's like, can I build a little house wherever I want versus here are the three spots where there's a circle. Make your house in one of the circles. Yeah. I don't know which way it goes.
But I mean, realistically, any of those is still pretty awesome.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Land. The dream.
What if your house were different depending on like what your characters? Is it race in that game?
There is race and there's job.
Yeah, like what if you had a different scale house? Because like some of the characters are really big and some of them are really small, right?
True.
Imagine if you were like a hobbit type character and you got to have a hobbit hole instead of like.
I will. Say...
I didn't realize there were hobbit like characters. I was saying that as an example. Oh, the Lavathels are the little dudes.
Yeah.
They're very cute.
So adorable.
Well, they do have it that, like, the Lavathels, because they're so small, the size of their mounts are match, So, for instance, like, you know, chocobos, right? Like the birds?
Yeah, the birds that are historically large.
Yeah, the Lalafell ones are much smaller.
That's really cute.
Yeah.
Are they babies or are they just like scaled?
They're just scaled.
I love that.
They don't even
I'm completely derailing this conversation.
They don't even say like, oh, we breeded special like teacup chocobos for you. It's just like, oh, here's your chocobo.
That's so cute.
Yeah, you can actually get Cloud Strife's Advent Children motorcycle in that game for like $30. And the Lalafell version, also scaled down and tiny and adorable.
That's awesome.
It's so cute.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Next up on the news.
We're going to stay a little bit in Square Enix land. I don't recall what y'all reactions to for the gameplay reveal of Final Fantasy 16 was, but producer Yoshida Naoki, also known as Yoshi P of Final Fantasy 14 fame, sort of came out and said, hey, we know that this gameplay isn't normal JRPG gameplay. Sorry, but this is what we do now. He didn't say this.
I mean, it wasn't even this is what we do now. It was this is how this game's gonna be. Deal with it.
Yeah,
which, you know, good for him.
But
it's what we were talking about earlier. Fucking make your game the way you want to make your game, man. Like,
make your game from Sakurai's lips to Yoshi P's ears. But I actually don't like. Are either of you guys fervent for Final Fantasy 16 based on the stuff you've been releasing? No.
I haven't played a Final Fantasy Final Fantasy game since 8? No, 10. I played 10 and didn't finish it. Okay. And that's it. I played 7 Remake and really enjoyed it. And normally I would have been saying, because before Remake I was saying, oh man, look at all this action stuff. I want menus to pick from. Like, I don't even like real-time RPGs. I want time to sit with my menu and decide which one I want to choose from a list.
Okay.
And 7 Remake kind of showed me the error of my ways with that. I really enjoyed it.
Ooh,
and like 16, just in general, aesthetically, it seems to be my scene. Like, I think I said this already, that like I'm excited that it looks like it's going to be like medieval dragons, magic, kings and castles and dudes in suits of armor. And it doesn't look like there's going to be any electronics. So... I'm unless something horrible comes out about it, I'm a day one. I want to try it out.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, I'm sure I will too, but I'm also not like, give me more trailers or I'll like swat your family or something. Like, I'm, you know.
Thank you.
When it comes out, it comes out.
You know what, Roy? In this day and age, I feel that needs to be said. Thank you for not swatting.
It's an important specification.
From your apartment in Japan.
But like, there's a lot of games coming. Like, there's a lot of games coming in a very short amount of time, and I don't even remember what the release date was for it.
Spring, right? Spring sounds right. You just caught me flat-footed, so I don't know either.
Yeah.
But it's funny you mention that, Tina, because we did get a bunch of game announcements from Opening Night Live, hosted by Jeff Keighley, I believe last week. I'm not going to go through every single one of them, because I don't.
There's a lot.
There's a crap ton. B, I'm like, okay, not all of this is great. So, first thing I wanted to get through is y'all like that new PlayStation controller, the DualSense Edge for all your.
Oh, yeah, that does look kind of interesting.
Yes. DualSense Edge, PlayStation blog also has an article about it. It's basically, this is the fourth time I've said the word basically. Apologies. It's essentially the Sony's answer to the Elite Series X controller thing. Wow, it's hard to talk when you don't use your crutch word. So it's a fancy Elite controller. I believe it has back paddles that are programmable and fancier things. I actually just got a Elite controller because you can't get them in Japan. But I'm not in Japan right now, so I went to my local Best Buy and went, yes, please. Also, I bought all the Jurassic Park movies because I'm a sucker, and it was $80 for the entire 6 movie collection. Because I hate myself. I love myself because of Jurassic Park 1 and 2. I hate myself because of Jurassic Parks 3 through 6.
You know, honestly, when you said that, I was like, I would pay $80 for Jurassic Park 1.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what you did.
Yeah, like I would pay $80 for that movie. That's a great movie. The rest of them were like, all right,
sure,
I guess I have these other movies now.
That's kind of my logic.
Anyway,
I highlighted the Lords of the Fallen, which is a reboot of Lords of the Fallen, it seems. Only reason I highlighted that is because after I saw that trailer, Danzig's mother was stuck in my head for about 7 days. If you haven't seen that trailer, rather than do a sad dad remake or whatever cover of that song, they just played Mother for the trailer. It's a very metal trailer, and they timed it right. There are some good reaction videos out there of people watching the trailer. I don't think we got Harry Potter fans here.
No, I will say though, I need to check this out, but this Dune Awakening thing sounds interesting to me. Like, survival, I haven't mentioned this.
Yeah,
I haven't mentioned this on the show, but ever since I got really into Zomboid, I'm like, any game that doesn't have a survival aspect, it feels very wrong to me currently. Like, unless I feel the weight of entropy around me at all times, and I'm like, this is too easy. Like, sometimes that's like with Xenoblade, I'm like, why aren't I hungry and thirsty? Like, I like that they make you wash your clothes, but I should have to eat and drink and kill animals for meat.
You have to wash your clothes in Xenoblade?
You don't have to, but you can.
Personal hygiene is every soldier's duty. That's what Lance told me.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I guess you do kind of get dusty. And then, like, when you're at a rest spot, you can wash your clothes.
I mean, I had soap in my inventory in Elden Ring the entire time. Did I use it once? No.
Yeah.
Did you know how to use it correctly? Because it took 4 characters for me to realize how to use it correctly.
Really? I mean, blind spots are going to happen. That's just...
Oh, yeah. Very niche. Going through Destiny, Mark's not here. I think that's literally... Okay, guys, we got a problem.
Uh-oh.
Hideo Kojima getting up all in our airwaves.
Uh-oh.
He announced he is doing a podcast exclusive to Spotify next Thursday.
I saw this, and he said he was going to have guests on, mentioned...
Keely is doing the new section.
So, like, what language is this in?
He said it's going to be both. I'm curious if it's going to be like Roy, you're in a booth thing, and Kojima-san is saying that.
Yeah.
I looked it up when I saw that it was announced, and I don't know if this is actually, because you know, very well researched over here. I don't know if this is actually how it is or not, but the like promo site for it had like sample clips, and the Japanese is just, you know, him speaking. The English was him speaking at a lower volume with English dubbed over it. And if that's what the actual podcast is, absolutely not.
That's
an unpleasant listening experience. Like when you're watching TV, like when you can see the person speaking and you can focus on, you know, but like a purely auditory experience with 2 separate audio tracks, even if you don't understand one of the languages, I feel like that would be really difficult to listen to.
Subtitles makes that bearable, but just like I'm on a jog and I'm running, like that's not...
But I don't know if that's what the final format is going to be like. Like I could be completely, you know, fucking this up. So
that's
it might actually be great.
It may be great. What is it? Brain structure, I believe is what it's called. Hopefully it's bi-weekly because it's on the 8-4 off week, because then we can just coexist. do a little cross promotion thing, if it's weekly, we're gonna have to meet in Shibuya. We're gonna have to throw down Shibuya. Maybe Shinjuku. I don't know. And that's kind of all I really wanted to mention from opening night live.
Monkey Island.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Monkey Island. There was
Island. We got a gameplay video. Yeah. We got info about a pre-order bonus. That is an extremely cool looking set of horse armor that serves absolutely no purpose in the game except to sit in your inventory the entire time.
I like
so that's exciting. Looking forward to that.
Yes. Roy, anything that jumped out at you here?
No, I just want to be a high level Dune man walking around in the desert is all
driving.
You just want that's all I'm thinking about. Yeah,
want sand. You're just like, I need more sand.
Do you think if you're high enough, you could ride one of those sandworm things?
It's either going to be limited to like a cutscene or your main fast travel thing. Mm. Like, hop on the sandworm with your with pickaxe. And I guess it closed, but Dead Island 2 also finally coming out. It's one of those development hell games that I never thought would come out. And hey, dreams do happen, I guess, for everyone that's looking forward to Dead Island 2, happy for you. I didn't realize Los Angeles was an island, but what are you going to do? That was opening night live. Bringing it back to the one, we have two From Software articles actually here for y'all. I don't know if you realize this, but Dark Souls 3's multiplayer has been offline for 7 months because of a security vulnerability. It's back. And I actually downloaded the patch the other day, and I was like, oh, I downloaded a Dark Souls 3 patch. Could it be? And yes, they have finally said they've addressed the security exploit that was available on all From Software games using that particular module of code. So if you want to go back to summoning friends and doing your multiplayer sparring and all that stuff, you don't have to use weird, wacky third-party server mishmash stuff. Dark Souls 3 is back online. The other FromSoft news, by the way, Tina, you should play Dark Souls 3 eventually.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to play through the entire catalog. Like, don't worry about it.
Enjoy the caravan that is From Software Games. The other From Software news, both Sony and Tencent have acquired 30% of From Software, actually, in a sort of joint investment acquisition. They combined, it's like 16%. So the company is SixJoy, which is a subsidiary of Tencent. They got about 16%. Sony got about 14%. The sort of parent company of From Software, Kadokawa, they continue to control their 70%. But essentially, they were saying, hey, we need money, and this gives us breathing room. We know our games are successful. And one thing that they mentioned is they're hoping to publish themselves a lot more. So, like, Sekiro was published by Activision. Elden Ring and Dark Souls, those were published by Bandai Namco. So they're hoping to sort of have more control over what they publish abroad, because I think they actually publish in Japan on their own accord, because they can do that there. So not quite the, like, oh, Sony's going to buy Square Enix or From Software that people were sort of hyping themselves up in this post-Activision Blizzard merger with or purchased by Microsoft. But, I mean, it's a play. It's interesting.
Hmm.
I can't.
There's
wait
been a lot of acquisitions going on lately.
Yes,
too
actually,
much, if you ask me.
Too much. Well, it depends. If you're the Embracer Group, you just want nothing but properties and IPs. In fact, also here, and I actually didn't expect to talk about this one, but we'll you brought it up, Roy.
Yeah.
You guys like Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
The man heard round the world. Damn, dude.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I definitely had a phase. I think we all had a phase, right? But
those movies were like highly impactful. Like, you couldn't go through adolescence with those movies coming out and not give a shit.
Yeah.
But like, as a video game IP or whatever, do not give a shit. I don't care.
Return of the King for GameCube was fantastic. It had no right to be as great as it was. Very
really
good. Oh yeah, I, like, genuinely really good. Like, get it if you can. But the Embracer Group, they purchased a bunch of companies, or acquired, embrace, whatever phrase you want to use, of which the notable ones I have here are Tatsujin, which is actually their first Japanese studio. I actually don't know if they've made anything yet. That's should have done more research. And Middle Earth Enterprises, which is the sort of the movie trilogy and the Hobbit sort of video game stuff. The Lord of the Rings, we're a little late to this. So the way the rights for Tolkien, the Tolkien estate does the rights for Lord of the Rings is weird. It's not just here's one thing like the NFL. They got the movie rights. They got the, like, if you make a web series that's four episodes or less, you use these rights. If you want to do stuff that's pure books, it's these rights. So Embracer Group basically got a significant chunk of the Lord of the Rings rights for like the books and the trill or the movie. I actually don't even remember right now. They're going to make Lord of the Rings games eventually.
Presumably. What we're
for Roy to just meh at. Which is fine, but like, honestly, I'm very meh on the series. I read The Hobbit for the first time last year. Man, I did not enjoy myself. So that actually cooled me on the entire Tolkien lore.
We're just burning bridges all over the place. Holy
yeah,
fuck.
It's not you. It's not you. It's J.R.R. Tolkien.
I can't believe it.
It wasn't great. Look, I actually just borrowed Fellowship of the Ring. I'm going to read it eventually.
You know, I got to tell you, if The Hobbit was a slog.
It was.
I don't want to tell you not to try.
So the thing that makes me hopeful, as I'm always told, oh, The Hobbit is actually like a novel. Lord of the Rings reads more like a history book. And that I'm kind of in for.
Okay, if that's okay. If that is a thing that you hear and you go, oh, hell yeah, then forget yeah. I spoke. Proceed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's not like The Hobbit, so I'm going to give it a shot.
What's the next story, Gabe?
Bit of a bummer news, I guess, is the way to over... broad stroke it, but the PlayStation 5 got a price increase in pretty much everywhere but the United States. But the UK, the EU, Japan, everyone, a bunch of other territories like Japan, China as well. The value went up roughly $50 wherever they raised the price. In case of euros, it went up straight up just €50. So currency conversion rates apply. But hey, I mean, there's a literal war going on and it's been over half a year. Supply chain is still messed up.
Did you guys hear that there's another boat stuck in the Suez Canal?
No.
Yeah, there's another one just sideways, just hanging out.
Hey, man, I'm just a boat hanging out, bro. Why can't we all chill?
Wait, really?
I mean, last I saw, maybe they fixed it.
But it happened again, is what you're saying.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. In response, both Nintendo and Microsoft, well, Nintendo flat out said, nah, we're not going to raise prices. However, they do plan on shrinking the size of their Nintendo Switch packaging by like 8% or something to like, they're now in the phase of like, how do we min max the amount of Switches we can put in a box? And they're shrinking the packaging by like 8 or 20% or something like that. And that will help in that sense, or they're hoping that will address it. Microsoft said, the way they phrased it was basically like, yeah, we're keeping prices in our minds. And I think they actually have raised the price of the Xbox. In places like, I want to say India is ringing in my head, but like they're saying, you know, nothing yet. We don't think so. But I think this is actually the first time. I mean, unless you consider the Oculus Quest 2 that just got a price raise. Like, I don't ever remember.
Isn't that the Meta now or something?
I don't know what you're talking about. I do know what you're talking about. I'm being silly. Yeah, it's
I
like
completely
the
believe you. That's the worst part.
That's why I had to like talk. I'm like, oh, she believes me. Yeah. Other than the VR headset, I don't think I've ever witnessed a price increase for a console. It's always been down, but I mean, these are crazy times, genuinely. Like, again, state of the world is turbulent. Is that how I will phrase it? Maybe it's just that we're older. When we see the news and can grasp what's going on in the world, it's a lot easier for us to go, oh wow. But you know, things are weird right now.
Unprecedented gets thrown around a lot.
I was trying to avoid the unprecedented phrase because it's been overused, but yeah, it's weird. I don't know if this is in response to supply chain issues. However, Sony has stealth released a new revision of the PlayStation 5 for those that can get it. It actually was sort of tested, released, deployed in Australia first. The article I have, let me jump down here, actually has like the model name, but it's about 200 to 300 grams lighter on both the PS5 normal version with the disc drive and the digital version without the disc drive. It's called the CFI 1200 and then A or B for whichever version. But in both cases, it's gotten a little lighter. But no word on like better cooling like they did last year or anything like that. But we're still very far away. I don't want to say, yeah, we might actually, you know, I'm going to say we're very far away from like a PS5 Slim. I won't even fathom PS5 Pro. Speaking of which, I'm broadcasting from the basement and there's a bunch of memories in boxes. And I actually found a Slim PS2 in here. That's maybe the size of an iPad mini.
Oh, man. See, now we're going to get into like some of my deepest regrets. One of them is I really, really regret not buying a brand new in the box PS2 Slim when I still worked at EB Games and they were $99. Should have just fucking bought one. I don't even remember why I didn't. I should have bought one because that was such a.
I'm tempted to bring it back with me, but I it's just the PS2. I have no idea where the power cables or all that stuff is.
This is Japan. You can go to book off, and they've got the big box of cables that are all just in a jumble and dig out the right ones.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I could also get a PS3 Slim at the hard offs and all that stuff. Let's see here. What else we got here? Final Fantasy. We gotta fill the dead air. Here's a fun thing. So, the Pokemon World Championship happened in between shows. That was in London. They announced that it's going to be in Japan next year. This coincides with the easing of COVID restrictions. Makes you wonder if Nintendo had or Pokemon Company had someone on the inside. Starting, I think, September 7th, which is great for me, they will not require PCR tests unless if you present a like vaccine passport that has 3 shots minimum. And they're bumping the quota of allowed people coming into Japan from like 20 to 50,000. And they are letting you buy non-chaperoned tour guides. You still have to do the tour guide thing, but there won't be someone ushering you about. I think 8-4 Play should be on site for a show at the Pokemon 2023 World Championships. We can all pitch in to get Roy to compete. And let's sponsor Roy and see how far he gets, and then we'll just have like a remote episode or something like that. No one is shaking their head enthusiastically.
I'll tell you what. Here's. I'll agree if the Patreon is up by then.
Oh, whoa. Shit!
Yeah.
Whoa! It's a shame Mark and John aren't going to listen to this episode. Listeners, make sure you at them. And I don't want to call it an ultimatum, but the suggestion.
I'm
like, sponsor Roy.
I feel goofy now because my first thought when that was announced was I was like, oh, fuck yeah, Pokemon Unite. I like forget that the main games of Pokemon exist, that people play them competitively. Like my brain immediately went to Pokemon Unite and then the card game.
Yeah.
That's like how far removed I am from the games at this point. Did you watch the Pokemon Unite finals?
I did not. I saw the result and I looked
at the fun. It was really? It was very exciting to watch.
Ooh, Tina, maybe we should actually get... Okay, here's what we're going to do. Listeners, we need your help. We're going to sponsor Roy to compete in his age bracket in whatever the Pokemon game is. It'll probably be Scarlet or whatever. And then we need three other people to form an 8-4 play Pokemon Unite team. Okay?
I'm not comfortable with this.
Yeah, this sounds like we're overreaching now. And we're
this was fun, and then suddenly it's not fun anymore.
I think they just want to convince John to make 8-4 esports jerseys for us.
Like, I mostly just want to go and, like, watch and have a fun time and, like, maybe get to, like, say hi to Spraggles or something. Like, that's all I'm after.
Why we just got eliminated the first day, and then we just hang.
Nah, that's way too much work.
I like the just let's get shirts idea. I'm done with that. It's funny, there was a thing in I think this was like before you guys were in the podcast chat, but like 3 years ago or something, Mark was like, hey guys, just so you know, we're getting shirts. So I decided I was going to be real annoying about this. So I, every year on the anniversary of him saying that, I would link to that, him saying that, and be like, "Any, when are those shirts coming?" We've never gotten those shirts. Like
dang.
We get, if any, now we need that Patreon. I want shirts.
I feel like this is going way off the rails here, guys.
Yeah probably.
Bring it in.
Yes. Hey, TGS is in 2 weeks, actually. Microsoft will be there. I forget who. I think it was Capcom said they got a surprise waiting for people or ready to drop at TGS. It will be in person and remote again. Well, last year it was fully remote, but this is sort of their first hybrid. I will not go to TGS this year because I do not want to get sick. But
same.
That being said, if John's like, hey, we're going to record something, and I'm like, okay, I'll go. just like that. I may be jet lagged, but TGS is here. By the time, actually, it'll be happening by the time the next show comes out. So we'll see what's going on then. And I think that wraps it up for the news. I'm going to play the wrapping up news theme.
are you ready, gang? Are you ready, gang?
I'm not. Okay, yeah. Now I am.
News.
There you go.
Perfect news.
That was the news. And I think that's going to do it for this 8-4 play. We actually went way longer than I thought we would. Once again, thank you, Liam, for stopping by to promote Curse to Golf. Can either of you, while I do the outro, look up his Twitter so we can plug that in the end? But until then, you can find us at 8-4.jp, our second home, GiantBomb.com. We got a thread on Resetera. You could also leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Acast, your podcast platform of choice. You can follow the show at 84play on Twitter. You can follow me at Gabriel DeLeon on Twitter. Tina, where can they find you?
I am Tina Butts with 2 T's and a Z. Roy?
I'm at Coach Awari, and Liam is at Liam BME if you want to follow him.
Yes.
See all the great reviews he gets.
Yeah.
And John was John TV.
At John TV. Thank you, Tina. And that's going to do it. We did it, gang. I was looking a little dicey earlier this week, but we really actually, this was a good show. I don't know what anyone else says. In fact, it's so good, guys. Are you ready? I'm ready to take us out.
Oh, you know, shit.
Please do.
Oh, my God.
Okay, you ready?
We are going to get sued.
We did the podcast that was a real good show. Oh, Gabe compared with the soundboard. He tells it's time to go. Hey!
Chan. My name is Wei. Takeda.